Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, hey everyone. Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. I'm speaking with Francis Rodino today. Francis, how are you on this wonderful morning for me and evening for you?
I'm doing great, Saul. Nice to be here halfway across the world.
Yes, halfway across the world. Isn't it funny how we're so used to doing this now? Like it just seems like you'd be in the other room, and in a way you are, but that we can do this. I still am amazed that we can sort of do this. But it's wonderful to have you on the podcast, and we're gonna talk
about
it.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. And we were saying before we started the podcast, I have some really nice people who are able to invite people like yourself onto the podcast. And I always feel very fortunate because I get to have great conversations. And today I'll let you tell everyone, for people who don't know, instead of doing a really little short introduction, I'll actually let you introduce yourself for people who don't know you, and a little sort of short history of, I guess, how you came to be where you are today with Lead Hero and other things too. But give us a short rundown on it.
Sure, absolutely. Well, you know, this podcast is focused on growing your business, right? So probably your listeners are all keen to grow their businesses. So, after about 20 years working on global campaigns for big brands like Disney, PlayStation, worked on the Olympics, Sainsbury's, and so on, you know, Citroën. I worked on big budget, multi-channel, global campaigns. And I just thought that, you know, I really wanted to help smaller businesses more than anything. Because with the big brands and big budgets come big teams, big politics, stakeholders, lots of moving parts. And it's not that I have a problem with that, but, you know, I did it for 20, 25 years. I wanted to make a bigger impact. And I thought actually taking some of the learnings, the tech stacks, the strategies, that the mindset of actually getting brands and names in front of eyeballs. Mm. You know, I set up Lead Hero in 2018 with the purpose of really helping small businesses stop wasting money on ads and tools and marketing that doesn't work. Mm. You know, and so fast forward to today, I wrote Leads Machine to change all that, you know, because unfortunately, you know, we're not able to help everyone that comes our way. And I think that putting our methods and thinking in the system, the 9-step system to help grow and scale your business, you know, into a book was a great kind of next step. And it serves as a blueprint for, in particular, service businesses. So if you have a service, if you're looking for more, you know, webinar submissions or discovery calls or sales calls or, you know, any service-led business can really benefit from this. It's a 9-step blueprint to generating consistent, predictable sales. That's what small businesses need the most: consistency, predictability, not guessing and hoping that they'll have clients tomorrow. Yeah. And obviously using technology like automation and AI, you know, to make things faster, more seamless and automated, you know, is the name of the game at the moment. So that's, you know, what I'm doing at the moment.
It certainly seems to be a name of the game at the moment, doesn't it? Like it still feels to some extent a little bit like sort of the Wild West because so many people are doing it. And like, I guess in sort of many ways, when it comes to marketing as well, it's like if you're a business owner of any size, how do you actually discern who's going to be like a good fit if they're, you know, if what they're saying is true. I mean, that's of the marketing side too. So what would you sort of say to people, Francis, if someone who's say got zero experience with using AI tools and or just so not even using AI tools, but they hear what you're talking about, what would you say to them is like a key sort of point of difference or things that stand out with what you're doing that will help someone, especially who's not really across sort of anything. They've just been doing whatever in their marketing, like for ages. They got no real structure. What would you say to them?
Well, if they've got no reason, what do you mean? Like they don't have a strategy?
Well, just like, you know, like a lot of people, I mean, it's sort of pretty safe to assume that there's like a whole heap of people who do some form of marketing, but like, I mean, you were saying in terms of structure, and they don't really, mm-hmm. they don't really have a, you know, a structure that they can, I guess, rely on is more the point. And because you're, you know, having these tools and people hear a lot of talk about AI and this and that, and they don't fully understand, but with your service and what you're doing, what would you say to them to, I guess, highlight that element of it, that it gives you this good structure and why that's the case? So people sort of understand it, I suppose, especially when they aren't particularly au fait with anything in that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think the problem that I see a lot of small businesses kind of fall into is that they just kind of jump into the last step, which is advertising or paying for advertising without doing the deep work. Mm. And by deep work, I mean really having the opportunity to dive into their client avatar, meaning, you know, the persona of who they're speaking to, who they're selling to, what are their deepest desires, their frustrations, their goals in life, where do they hang out, really kind of spending the time to do the research, ask them, even businesses that are well established, a lot of the time either have taken their avatar for granted or think that they know them, but a lot of them are actually just touching the surface. And when you take the time to actually know who your customers are, everything then kind of falls on top of that. Mm. Your message, how you communicate, the offers that you make, your unique value proposition, your unique mechanism, right? The way you do things. And that's kind of how you stand out. And then being able to put that all into a customer journey that makes not only just makes sense, but is attractive and irresistible. And most importantly, helps people that don't know you exist turn into people that understand what you do, value what you do, have an intent to buy from you and then take action, right? And this is nothing new. This is time-tested marketing psychology. However, I think so many businesses just don't do that work with small businesses, with small budgets. They jump into ads and wonder why their marketing doesn't work, right? And the second thing is that a lot of businesses, yes, you need leads, but you don't always need more leads. because leads are getting lost and businesses don't have a system. Like most businesses, they're leaking money through slow or zero follow-up, and they don't have a system to actually nurture, build relationships on the right channels, in the right places, at the right time, in an automated way. They're not doing it themselves, right? So it's not so much about AI or technology. Obviously, those are pillars that hold your system up, that make what you do faster and cheaper and more effective. But without actually spending the time to develop your roadmap, as we call it. Like in my book, I told you, know, this method is called the RED method. It stands for roadmap, engine, and drive. A roadmap, meaning you need to know where you're going, who you're speaking to, how you're going to deliver that message, and the map of where you're going to reach them. And then the engine is actually your system to capture, cultivate, and convert leads into buyers and long-term relationships. And then you drive forward, reaching more people, reselling to existing company, existing clients and new clients, and then refining the system through optimization, right? And so essentially there's a method. Most businesses don't have a method, and they're just kind of doing a bit of this or that, hoping that they'll kind of fall onto something that does work, right? But when you can look at it, your strategy in a chronological step-by-step fashion, which is what I teach in Leads Machine, it essentially becomes a pathway that is more clear as to how to get your marketing working, and ultimately to create a system that is scalable and helps businesses grow sustainably.
Yeah, I almost feel like having, and maybe this is the reason why you wrote the book, maybe you can sort of respond to this then, but I almost feel like having a book or having some sort of training in some sort of form before people or sort of during, before, or after, depends on where people are, I suppose, as a business, about those things that you talked about, is kind of crucial, because if you don't really understand the reasons why you're doing something, also, like you were saying, you're talking about although people understand their customers and clients and all that sort of stuff. And I know a lot of people, when they hear, you know, marketing people or people in our industry broadly talking about that, they sort of glaze over. You know, that's not that kind of uncommon, but it is really important. And that structure too, because if you don't, I mean, that kind of applies to anything, right? Like it's almost you apply that to just about anything in life, having a structure, even if you're not, you know, super good at that structure at the beginning, it's more important to have one, really, isn't it? Like to actually have one in the first place. And then, like you were saying, going through that process of refinement, I almost feel like that, that people being okay and sort of accepting that there's going to be a constant process of refinement is like a much bigger deal than everyone realizes, that sort of willingness just to go, this is going to be a part of it, and you kind of need to embrace it instead of it being viewed like the quick fix, you know, that here's my answer, bang, I can roll it out. Like what do you think, like in your reasons, like for writing the book, you were saying at the beginning, like it's then, you know, has that role for people who may not then use your services or are doing things on their own. What other reasons were there for writing the book?
Well, I think you get to a point in life and career where, you know, I think it was time to put the method into some kind of asset or reusable shape, you know, that could be used as a tool by ourselves and by other people. You know, you do a lot, you know, a lifetime of marketing and digital media, kind of, you learn a lot. You learn a lot. And I think the book was a great opportunity to just go, hold on, well, what we're helping businesses grow with digital marketing systems. What do we do every time? Like, why are we getting the result? There's certain things that usually the most successful businesses will be doing. And that's essentially the real motivation to put it all into a book, is so we can actually transfer that knowledge to other people, you know, whether they work with us or not. You can take the book and follow it. And also, I think that I wanted to educate business owners, because we work with a lot of businesses. They don't understand the fundamentals of marketing. So they're not necessarily holding their agencies accountable. So many businesses just hire a marketing agency, don't manage them, don't ask them the right questions, don't take ownership over being a huge part of this relationship, and just put everything onto the agency to make them successful. Well, you know, it's not a surprise, but you need two to tango, the client and the agency. It's always a partnership. Work together to get the result. So if you're a business owner and you relinquish yourself of the responsibility or accountability to actually ask the right questions, have the right metrics tracked, know what those metrics mean, cost per lead, cost per acquisition, conversion rates, cost per sales, number of sales calls, laps, leads, appointments, presentations, sales, being able to measure it. What you can't measure can be improved. And
on that subject, sorry to interrupt. I was just thinking just then, as you were saying that, what would you then say despite all that? Because that, of course, makes complete sense. That sounds like it's, you know, it makes sense, and it's exactly what, you know, should be done. But despite that, what would you then say to people who, you know, I still have these sort of conversations in similar areas and other things where people are just coming to an agency and they go, yeah, but I don't want to. I'm coming to an agency because I don't want to think about it. What would you say to those people? Like, when people, you know, or they might not say exactly that, but that kind of, they get that they are sort of a partner, but, I'm sure you've experienced that. Like, when people go, yeah, but like, I'm hiring you because I want to not have to deal with it. What would you say to them? Like, to, you know, maybe encourage them or to support them to kind of learn why it's actually important that they have that participation.
So I think that it depends on the business owner's ambition to grow or not.
Sure. Yeah.
Because if they just want to stay with it where they are and not grow systematically, fine, that's their prerogative to do so. However, it's a very competitive landscape. There's plenty of competitors that want to eat your lunch. And take your team and take your clients and grow their businesses and take your market share. And I would say that the most successful businesses that are scaling, meaning expanding, growing, spending money to advertise their business, the business owner is, you know, the buck stop there when it comes to the P&L and the budget. How do they know how much to allocate, what their profit is going to be on the ads, on their marketing spend? You know, I haven't worked with a very successful business owner that doesn't prioritize the metrics and the sales capacity and the marketing spend. They don't need to be an expert. You hire an agency to provide expert services. But at the end of the day, you know, if it's not working correctly, how do you manage through that? How do you know what's working, what's not working? And especially when you start to increase your ad spend and your business is growing, you want to make sure that every opportunity to, you know, leverage that lead is capitalized. And more often than not, the agency doesn't have access to the internal workings, the operations, the sales team to really optimize that. It's the business owner that has to join up all those parts together or hire someone, you know, to do that role, which sometimes, you know, as you grow, you will delegate that responsibility.
Yeah. I guess in a way that was like a leading question. That was a great answer. You kind of outlined that, I guess, in a way that I'm sort of thinking in my mind, because there certainly are a whole range of different things that an agency can't do and might not know. And I mean, that's also from the flip side too. That's, you know, it's not always necessary that either side knows particular things, but certainly, I mean, it's kind of safe to assume to some extent that the more that everyone knows about things that are relevant, you know, to each other's sort of role, the more likely there's going to be, you know, improved results. Is that a true statement? Do you reckon that's the right sort of assumption? Like, I might not be in every circumstance where, you know, but it comes down to, you know, proper communication, I guess, really, doesn't it? At the end of the day, I'm just between, you know, humans, you know, just actually understanding each other. I mean, it's not a guarantee that people are going to understand each other, because you could be in the same room and saying, you know, the same words and people still don't quite get it. But it's, you know, it's kind of that from the human side of things. This is where, like, I kind of find it as an interesting, like, general sort of topic of the use of these really great sort of AI tools and automation and things. You know, where does that tip over into, like, the human part of that? Because at the end of the day, a good AI tool is only as good as its prompting, really, isn't it? And that comes from a person. So it's still behind that, there's still, you know, the right sort of thinking. So in what you do with these tools, do you provide any, I guess, education or thinking or assistance with the prompting aspect of what needs to be done in those tools?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we provide usually a done-for-you service that will build and configure and prompt AI bots across messaging channels and also voice AI. Right. So these are like actual AI assistants or employees, let's call them, that will take phone calls qualify leads, follow up, have full-blown human-like conversations across SMS or WhatsApp, Facebook message. So you're running ads, you get inquiries through your Facebook ads, an AI takes over, answers all the questions that someone would have, and books them into your diary, period. And we build those bots, like from the ground up, you know, learn about the business, take the website information, design frequently asked questions, and kind of, you know, create those data sets that the AI can refer back to. And it gets smarter and smarter all the time. So the more questions and the more you prompt it and the more you tweak and optimize it, it learns and can be very efficient and much more efficient than a human being most of the time.
That's where the content is king thing sort of comes in again, isn't it? It's like, you know, content is it's only as good as the content that it's fed. But like you said, then from the learning aspect of that though too, when you say it improves in its learning, is that primarily around the content, but also or is it also the way in which it actually sounds more natural in the conversation, or is it the two of them?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
The AI, when you're saying that it's improving, the AI tool, is that aspect of it relating to the content in that, say, it's improving in its way to actually answer, say, like a person's questions about that content? Or is it also the way it sounds, like the naturalness of its sort of tone, or was it mainly just about the content?
I think, in terms of the way it sounds across voice, that's improving all the time as the technology gets more efficient. But I think in terms of the learning what to say, yes, you know, if you correct it, you only need to correct it once. So, for example, if you have certain rules around what your products or services do, or it makes a mistake because you forgot to prompt it this way or that, you can correct it and then it will always learn as well. So essentially, these are learning models that get better the more you use them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big difference, I suppose, in perhaps perception of what a like chatbot or AI bot was in the past, I guess, isn't it? It's that it's not just a tool that helps you answer questions, that it's actually learning all the time. It's like a language model it's not a large one, but it's, you know, it's a language model of sort of being able to evolve, but also to, I guess, once you establish in the business what your, you know, particular things that are unique to your business, whether, you know, in form of content is, then you have to pass that on to this sort of tool. So I guess that gets back to structure, doesn't it? Like to actually, I would imagine, and sort of maybe you can give like a case study or some examples here of people, say, in a business that you've worked with who have actually learned a lot about their own business through that process of actually going, we've got to establish these sort of things, and like you generally know them in the business, but you've never put them into any sort of structure. Have you got any examples of people having some sort of amazing realizations or going, actually, I never really knew that about my business until I went through all this?
I think the realizations are not so much with the business owner usually has a very good understanding of their business, especially the businesses we work with are not starting out. So we don't really work with startups, for example, or very small businesses who don't have a proof of concept. So the right time to implement AI, you know, is when you have so many inquiries that you need to leverage AI in order to be efficient, because otherwise you'd be hiring a sales team member, right? Mm. So given, you know, these are businesses already of a certain you know, they're established, so to speak. But in terms of the learning, I think the AI is always surprising us in terms of its capability. So, for example, we work with one of the largest martial arts academies in the UAE, and they have multiple locations. And the primary language is English, but we didn't even think of doing it in any other language. But when the inquiry started to come in Arabic, the AI was just replying in fluent Arabic, you know, and of course it sounds normal now, right? Because yes, yeah, so why wouldn't it? It knows every single language on earth pretty much. And what's surprising is actually the capability was pretty mind blowing, because you think, hold on a second. I now have literally no borders in terms of interacting with people across the globe. Language is no longer an issue. In most cases, getting paid, payment processors is not an issue. In most countries, it is in some others, but there's ways around it. You know, you can make money, you can do business across the world. Wherever you are, all you need is a phone. It's crazy.
Mm.
You know, and we're just at the beginning of this.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's still the beginning, isn't it? Yeah, it's happened so quickly, like this sort of acceleration of, especially it's appearing in just about every sort of piece of software, that introduction of it, which I find you know, fascinating. But like as you were going through this process, as you were working on Lead Hero and you were scaling it, what are some of the different lessons and things that you actually learned along the way that you feel would be really helpful for people to hear, or that you just want to share?
The lessons that I learned along the way are that, well, whether in business or marketing or writing the book, that's a question to you. Like, do you want me, is it my lessons of
all right, writing a all business? Right.
Or
is, I thought it was like a lead in. I thought it was a lead in with a dramatic pause. I was waiting for the punchline. So say that again. Say it again.
No. So my question is, so you asked about my learnings when writing this book, or in business, or in general, about like AI.
Oh, the business like, more specifically, like the but you can answer the two of them. But if we just go with just the business, like you're scaling Lead Hero, and you mm-hmm. had, you know, the, what are some of the lessons that you kind of learn on the way of that sort of changing and evolving as these things do?
Ah, okay. Well, I would say that, you know, my personal lessons is that, you know, as a business owner, we need to be okay with the journey of business and not focused on this end result, right? Being content and happy with where you are at any growth stage, and knowing that you are just on, you know, you're in an ever evolving moment. Because essentially what happens is time passes and you look back and you see your accomplishments retrospectively. But when you're in the moment, sometimes it can feel kind of slow and like you're not actually going anywhere.
It's always easier in retrospect, isn't it? Yeah. It's always easier in retrospect, you know, after the fact.
So to be at peace is what, you know, I've learned to be more peaceful in business, because when I started out, I wanted results much faster than I think was realistic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's fairly common though too, is that it's for some more than others. But yeah, I mean, you sound like you're in a good sort of spot. I mean, I don't really know you that well, Francis, but you sound like you're, you know, you've obviously had a wealth of experience before coming to Lead Hero, right? So it's like it's not like you woke up one day and just went, I'm going to make this thing using a, you know, these tools. Like there was all this sort of history beforehand. So, you know, you're not just sort of out of the box. You've got like a whole lot of stuff beforehand. And then, cause I've heard from other friends and people that I know who've then written a book that can be quite a formative sort of experience for them. And what was that like for you? Cause like you said earlier, it's the, you know, you were talking about, you come to this sort of point and you feel like you want to, you know, consolidate things and put these things that you've learned and your experience into a book. But the actual process of writing the book, how did you find that? What was that something that you felt really comfortable with, or was it a bit of a sort of a hard slog, or up somewhere in between?
Well, I would say, you know, if I said it was easy, I would be lying, but I think it's, before I get into that, there's a great book out there called The Slight Edge. Ever heard of it?
I've heard of it, but haven't read it.
By Jeff Olson, The Slight Edge. I love that book because that was also a great kind of learning point in business, reading that book, which I recommend to all of the listeners today. If you haven't read it, Slight Edge, because I think it will help everybody to get more in tune with doing, not rushing things, and doing little things consistently in your business. Yeah. And it's the same with writing a book. If you try to write a book, you know, in a week, chances are you may burn out. You may not write what you really want to write or tell the story you want to say because you're just trying to get everything out. And a lot of the time it's just having that time to go back and reflect and rewrite is also really important. So I think that in the spirit of quantum jumping, which I'm a true believer in, is like you just kind of, you do small little things.
Yep.
And then one day you're in a different place. You do small little bits of the book over time. And then one day you have a book. And then one day it's published. And it's like, how did I do that? How in the world did I manage to get through all of that, right? But you just do, because you do it in little pieces. And then you go back and you need to get comfortable also with putting it away for the night. You know? And just not letting it loom over you as a negative thing, but actually being a real positive. And I think that, you know, the process was was good. You know, I wrote, having a coach is helpful, or having someone you can bounce ideas off, you know, to help extract that knowledge and get perspective as well. And also testing out the manuscript and also testing it with yourself. I actually rewrote the whole book after writing it. I wrote the whole thing. And then when I went back to it, it's like, no, that's not really what I meant. Or I could say this differently, right? Mm. And so there is a process of just going back and being self-critical and refining yourself. So yeah, it is an iterative process that took, you know, the writing process took about a year, but the methodology and the system development probably took around 3 or 4 years prior.
Right, right. So you really started initially with the structure about the things that you want to say, excuse me. We started with the actual structure, formed the framework, and then did any of that sort of change in terms of the order or the way you were explaining it once you started to get into the actual writing part, when things made more or less kind of sense, like when you were going, okay, I got my structure, that has to be tweaked a little bit. Did any of that sort of change once you got into the thick of it?
Absolutely it did. But however, the structure, I think, is really one of the first things you do. Because, you know, I actually started with a model, right? So I had a model that consisted of kind of three core levers. The strategic lever, which is the roadmap, the engine lever, which is, you know, the system, and then the driving forward, which like stands for the scale part. And within each lever, there were three accelerators, as we called them. So they're the hows, or they're the proprietary toolkit on which we leverage to make certain things happen. Market, message, map, capture leads, cultivate, convert, refine, reach, resell, and refine, right? In that order. Mm-hmm. And that essentially, that model was what we were using in our business to deliver results. And that essentially became pretty much the outline of the book, but with a, you know, introduction. Obviously, there's a lot of mindset that has to go into it. So we cover mindset and the thinking to basically make sure we can frame what needs to happen next. And then there's a conclusion. So I started out with that framework, and then we just needed to go and kind of fill in the blanks.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I can only imagine that, sort of that process, like, now, after the fact, like you said, that you rewrote it, are there any things that you look at now, even then after that sort of rewrite, that you would kind of be, oh, I should have included this, or maybe that could be in like another book?
Well, I think each accelerator could be a book on its own. That's the thing. And this is basically, you know, it's meant to show people the way. It's not the, you know, the in-depth, all-encompassing tactics and tools for everything that you can imagine when it comes to marketing. That would be impossible. But what was really important was actually to show people a clear pathway and help them go from confusion to clarity, from a antiquated system to a fully automated system.
And that's where you were saying mindset, the mindset aspect is important. And I guess that's always, it seems like from what I understand from what you're saying, you seem to have addressed that, which is a thing that I often find is that sort of gap in where people go, here's a tool, here's like a set of tools. Like you were talking about a little bit before, is people get, they either go and they go, and someone says you need to do Google Ads or you need to do this, and they usually just dive in, but there's no prior understanding. I mean, that's one part of it, but then the mindset of how that's going to sort of work for their business, like the bigger picture then too. And obviously just like really simple things like what your goals are, even knowing those things in the first place, which people, you know, in many instances won't, I mean, maybe not the people that you've been sort of working with, but a lot of, I mean, different business owners, like even if the goals are there, but they're not super clear, that's going to have a fairly big impact on, you know, how to actually reach them, surely, isn't it? Like if you don't know exactly what they are, or they're not, or that's not sorted out first, it's hard to really hit the target, isn't it? Like you can't really do that, or you could. I mean, I'll just kind of reframe that, I suppose, because maybe like it's might not be as clear cut as that. Maybe some of the process, especially if you're doing it in little chunks of actually learning, say you don't know exactly what your goals are, you haven't quite refined that. Perhaps like is it true to say that some of the process of going through marketing in this way, I mean, with someone like yourself, can help you actually refine and find out what they are more clearly? Is that, do you think that's true, or should it be all ironed out sort of first before you do any marketing?
Well, I guess what I would say to that is that if you don't know where you want to go, how do you get there? And so if
one step at a time.
Well, but which way?
Well, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Which way? If you're in the car and you need to get to, you know, your destination, you have to put something in that GPS or in the Waze. You have to put something there. And, you know, a lot of businesses do know specifically what they want to achieve. Many, many don't. Actually, you can't imagine how many sales calls I get on. And the first thing I say, well, what are your goals for this year? And they're like, I don't know.
Hmm.
Right. And when it comes to marketing, you have to know where you want to go, because how do you know what to do? I mean, there's so many things you could do. Why is paid ads going to be a route for you?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's why I asked that question, because, you know, what does somebody do when they actually don't know, you know, like you said, like they actually don't know. And that's why I kind of asked the question as a, you know, as a idea, is can then like some sort of start, like when they're not 100% sure or they partially know, can starting, just the act of actually starting, help them define what that is? Like, because it's fine saying, you know, you should be knowing that, but if somebody really doesn't know and some information, like some data and information from a part of the marketing process can help them do that, then that could be, I mean, you know, it's a little bit chicken and the egg too. Like, you need to know.
It sounds like a very expensive way to learn.
Yeah, sure. Oh, well, I'm not really advocating that that's how you learn, but I'm saying that it could be a contributing factor. Yeah. Yeah. So in that case, if you don't sort of know in the first place, what's a good, say, first step as you talking to a client and they say, what you just expressed before, they go, I don't know. What's your usual next step after that? What do you say to people?
Well, they will probably need to, they have to look within and have a good, think about why they're in business and what they're doing and what's the purpose of their business. What is the purpose of a business anyway? Mm. I mean, isn't it to grow the business and to make money?
Mm. And slightly different. Yeah, and slightly different for different people too, but all those core things, sure. Yeah. So you're saying, so it's really to go away, think about it and reflect on it. And I mean, do you work with people who are either, I guess, consultants or business coaches to sort of help people to actually think some of that through before they start, any marketing process?
No, I don't. Personally, no, because we don't work with startups.
Yeah.
This is the thing. It's like it's a completely different ball game. Mm. Like there are different services for these people than the ones that we provide, because you're growing a startup. Okay, say if you're just starting out and you don't have a business idea, you don't know what you want to do.
Mm.
It's different in year one to when you have your first few employees, and to then, or when you're just testing a proof of concept. Say you have an app idea or a software of a service, or you're just going out with a new offer, you haven't sold it and it's not proven in the market, you're going to need different solutions. You have a different set of problems. You're going to need different solutions than a business that has been in business for 20 years operating in a big market that is established, and they know their growth target, that they know. Like those conversations of not knowing what they want to achieve this year, they just don't happen at that size.
Mm.
Because you have to keep the lights on.
Yeah. Is that true? I'll just, I'm sort of pose a question here. Is that, the assumption that everybody at that sort of stage that knows, I'm sure that is probably true, but like, have you come across, because I wasn't really talking about startups. I was sort of speaking about like the people who have been in business. I've met like a whole host of people who are quite experienced, who've been in business, who haven't got, what you're speaking about. Like they don't really understand their market. In some instances, it's just been sort of blind luck that they've been able to, they've just been right place, right time, and they've never necessarily always really understood exactly why. So I'm sort of speaking about those, people more who actually are experienced, but they've never for whatever reason actually sort of understood those things, not really startups.
Yeah. Well, blind luck isn't scalable.
Well, yeah.
It's not repeatable either.
No, that's right. And that's what I'm saying is that for those people, what do you sort of say to them? Because like, that's a different scenario to, than a startup. Like it's the people who actually probably have got all the information in their head somewhere, but they've never actually put it, or they've never actually put it, probably more specifically, people who do actually understand, but they've never actually put it into a system, or they've never written it down. It's not in a structure. they have never had a had it more mapped out. I guess they're probably more the people that I'm speaking about.
Right. Well, I wonder. I mean, I would question whether they're looking to grow and scale. At that point, probably not.
Well, maybe not. I mean, that's right. I mean, you can only ask people questions and sort of dive in further to find out reasons, can't you? Like as to why that's the case. That becomes like a to some extent like a philosophical thing as to like you were saying, like why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah, not everybody has to scale their business, I guess.
Yeah.
Some people want to just keep it as it is. Some people are fortunate enough to have, you know, a referral network and an existing client base, and that's what all they want. However, there's the businesses that we work with are very ambitious. They work in competitive markets. If they stop marketing, that's it for them, right? They don't stop marketing. And they need to keep that marketing working. They have mouths to feed. They have employees that rely on their salaries, and the leads need to come in and the sales need to come in. And if they, and you don't turn the marketing off. So those are kind of like at a different level of, they have a different set of concerns.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely understand. And is that, so are there, in terms of the actual industries that you work with, are there any that are more common than others that get the most benefit, I guess, from what you do, or is it quite broad?
Well, I would say, businesses who are advertising online absolutely get the most benefit. So if you're running ads, you want to make every opportunity count. You want to make sure that people respond to those, that your sales team responds to those leads, and those leads get booked in, right? Industries that leverage our systems and get great results, service-led businesses in particular, who are advertising online, home services, everything from solar, plumbing, HVAC, banks, local businesses, gyms, chiropractic clinics, beauticians, restaurants.
Pretty diverse.
Yeah.
And you work with also, there was a reference, I think, on your site with ServiceMate too, because I know like a couple of our clients, our trade clients, ServiceMate is what they completely rely on. So has your service got a integration with that? Or what was the reference to ServiceMate? Is that right?
Yeah, we do have an integration with ServiceMate.
Right.
Absolutely. So leads come into the system and they can seamlessly transfer into ServiceMate as, book jobs and so on. And then when jobs are complete, it can reactivate the AI as well to ask for reviews and whatnot. So, yeah, pretty seamless.
Yeah. So at this point, Francis, I'm going to ask you for a quote. We talked about this at the start, and you had one in particular that you wanted to share. So what is it? Tell us what it is.
Yeah, so, well, this quote is from one of my mentors who wrote the foreword of my book. If you can't generate leads, almost nothing else matters, and this book will get you drowning in leads. Daniel Priestley, who's the founder of Score App and a great book called Key Person of Influence, really wants to hammer home that everything is downstream from lead generation. If you don't have leads, you don't have conversations. If you don't have conversations, you don't have sales. And so I think the opportunity now, which is there for so many businesses to take, is that you can turn your business into a lean, mean generation, a lead generation machine. And the software has never been cheaper. The AI makes it more seamless and easy. You can really cut those costs down on human beings to have to do the, you know, the heavy lifting. And we are living in an amazing time to run a business and be an entrepreneur. Like, we have the tools for a one or two man business to act as if they got the team of 30 people. It's incredible.
It is. But,
you know, the adoption is slower, and, you know, many businesses haven't yet taken advantage of this opportunity. But, you know, it's happening and happening quickly.
Yeah. I think it's, you're right. It's a really interesting time. And I think, like, the thing that I hear a fair bit from people is this general sort of idea of how if their customers or their clients are engaging with, like, AI chatbots and things, that it's going to be like this sort of unfounded, really, sort of idea that because it's, you know, it's obviously not a person, that people, you know, there'll be some sort of negative response to that. And I find it sort of interesting too, because it's not comparing it usually with existing conversations that are happening, because they might not be happening anyway, you know. And so you add in a tool that's, if it's trained the right way, you know, sounds, you know, it is a certain part in that process, and then real people slip in. So I mean, once people get that, like, I'm you're right, it's very time saving. It can help to reflect on what you want to say too, I guess, doesn't it? Like, if you have to train a tool in order to say things in a particular way, then that's going to help you actually understand what you have to say in some ways.
Absolutely. You know, look, a great use case is this. Like, I work in London, and, you know, that the NHS has GP surgeries. And the only way you can see a doctor is you have to wait until 8:30 in the morning, and you can't call before. And at 8:30, you call to get an appointment for a day. You can't even book in advance. And because they're so stretched and under-resourced, so you call, and you're then in a queue. And the queue has so many people waiting in it that they then put you in a callback system, where you then call back, you get a call back, you speak to a receptionist that is completely unqualified, who then may or may not book you in depending on the seriousness or the availability, right? It's ridiculous. And AI can absolutely replace all of that. Like, if you are sick and in pain, I guarantee you, you don't care if you're talking to an AI, as long as you get your booking. It's like, thank you very much.
I think you could be right. Yeah. I think people overthink that a lot. I think there's a lot of,
And people will get used to it. If I phone Metro Bank, which is a leading bank here in the UK, I speak to an AI for quite a long time before they pass me over to a human. I don't care, because it's actually quite good. It understands what I need. And so I think that's the thing, is you want to speak to a human when you want a personal, when it's really sensitive, maybe, or maybe not. I don't know.
No, I agree. I mean, I think all of that can get way muddled in just, like, reasons for people doing or not doing it that aren't really founded in like you know, actual engagement. Because there was something that you said then that I just kind of realized about, and I don't think I ever thought it through before, that I realized is actually quite good when you talk to, in fact, I think I was just doing it the other day in our, I had a query about my Telstra bill, like phone bill, right? It was like some other thing that they sent. And the process where it went through with the actual chatbot was of course, because of what it is, it was really logical. And it had a series of things of the equivalent of like frequently asked questions. None of them, you know, applied, went through this other thing. And I actually got to, like, in a pretty short amount of time, I got to where I needed to go to the next step, like, quite quickly. And so, mm-hmm. like, that part of it, to cut through, like, the other noise that might occur in a, you know, in a human interaction as a precursor, I think is really good. But, mm-hmm. But listen, Francis, have you, so where do people actually go online then to find out more? Like, we'll have a link in the description too, but where do they go? Tell them where they find out more.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Well, you can just Google me, Francis Rodino, or go to my website, francisrodino.com. There's a little bit about me, the book. You can download the book at leadsmachinebook.com. Actually, we have a unique offer there for $9.97 with a ton of great bonuses to help you create great landing pages and ChatGPT prompts and conversion scripts and everything. That's a real offer there to get your hands on the book. And leadhero.ai is the agency that will develop AI bots and agents for you if you're a business that's advertising online and you want to get more out of your marketing.
Thanks, Francis. And it's a really, whilst this is a topic that, you know, people talk about a lot, it's great having a perspective like yours coming from where you came from originally. And now, like, it adds, for me anyway, like being in this industry, sort of too, it adds a lot of sort of weight to sort of saying to people to use these tools and why. You know, I think that's really important to actually explain to people, and you know, it's great having the book too. Have you got an audio version of the book yet? Or
not yet. I haven't had the opportunity to record it yet, right. But that'll be a next step.
Oh, good. Yeah, no, because we'll sort of spread the word, of course, via podcast.
You.
But yeah, no, my pleasure. And because I think, like, the more in general, from, you know, a philosophical point of view outside of just businesses, it's great for people to make money and to, you know, feed their family and their employees and all that. It's good to pass that shared sort of good knowledge around. You know, I think that's a really important thing because it has a wider advantage to, you know, the business community. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's an advantage for everyone, really. So, but thanks again for being on the podcast. It's been really.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's a privilege to be on your podcast. I really appreciate having a chat with you. Thank you for the brilliant conversation.
Yeah, no, thanks, Francis. And what's the time over there now in London?
That's about 10:15 p.m.
10:15, yeah. It's 8:15. I always give sort of times on the podcast because I'm interested, and two, I think it's an interesting visual, you know, for people in their minds, you know, to the connection across all these different sort of countries. I like it. So thanks again, and thanks again everyone for listening once again to our little podcast, and we will speak to you again soon. Say goodbye to everyone, Francis.
Bye. Thank you guys for listening. And take care. And this is a unique time to be an entrepreneur and a business owner. I'm so excited for you.
Yeah, very true. Thanks again, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business Podcast.